The image of a backcountry hut is very evocative for many of us, and as Doc quite rightly point out, they provide unique places to stay, a refuge from the bad weather, or just somewhere to rest and recover when you're exploring the outdoors. And apparently there are around 1,000 backcountry huts in New Zealand, and our first guests tonight have co-authored a new book, A Bunk for the Night, A Guide to New Zealand's Best Backcountry Huts. And they're on separate lines, so welcome Jeff Spearpoint, good evening.
Hi Karen, how are you?
How are you doing? Where am I speaking to you? Where are you?
I'm down
from?
In Christchurch, you're out of Burlings Plains. Yes.
Great. And Sean Barnett.
Good
evening. Kia ora. And where are you, Sean?
I'm in Wellington.
Okay, good on you. And congratulations, first of all, on the book. But you have a third contributor who isn't with us tonight. That's Rob Brown.
That's right. He's down in Wanaka, so we've got quite a good spread of the country between the three of us.
Yes, if he's listening tonight. Hi, Rob. And you both obviously love tramping. So have you stayed in every one of these huts? Jeff, I'll ask you.
Probably Sean's been to more than I have, actually. But I've been to a fair few. That's Jeff here.
Yeah, have you? And what about you, Sean?
I've visited about 800 of the 1,000 huts. In fact, I'm just one shy of 800. So, yes, spent quite a bit of time in huts over the years.
And so how long has that taken you to get to 799 huts?
About 35 years. So
it
gets harder too, the more remoter and obscure the huts. But, I'd like to get to 1,000. That would be a nice goal to achieve.
Are they all run by Doc?
Some of them are actually owned by clubs and... just, you know, on conservation land, but they're open to the public. Some of them are on farmland in leasehold country and things like that. Some of those aren't accessible to the public. Some of them are. All over the place.
So let's talk about the book, and it's a guide, obviously, to the best backcountry huts. So have you laid it out in where it's situated with a picture, what the facilities are, that sort of thing, Sean?
Yes, we have. We've got an introduction to the book, which just gives a general overview of how many huts there are in New Zealand, the diversity of places that they're in, and a few basics about, hut fees, who looks after them, hut etiquette, that sort of thing. And then we profile 200 different huts around the country. So that's about a fifth of all the public huts in New Zealand, giving basic information about how to get there and what the appeal of the hut is, and wee snippets of history. And we've aimed for a broad spread of huts, so right from Northland down to Rakiura, Stewart Island, to give pretty good coverage of the country.
Oh, fantastic. There'll be so many people interested in getting the book, especially now that we're sort of homebound, as it were, country-bound, see the country first, and just get out there and have a look. I'm very sorry to say that I've never stayed in a backcountry hut, so I wonder how many New Zealanders haven't. Jeff, what's your knowledge of that in terms of people you come across who haven't actually been to a hut?
Oh, there'd be a fair few New Zealanders who probably haven't, but having said that, I would say the majority have probably had a night somewhere or other. And it's never too late to start, Karen.
No, that's true. It never is. That's right. All right, well, tell us about some of these huts. So the pictures are amazing, of course. It's just even to look at the cabins, they're just all so different. And when you go round the country, are they different stylistically or architecturally in different parts of the country?
Very much so, and that reflects a couple of things. 150 years of building huts for all sorts of purposes. So we've got some very old ones built of stone that were originally used by high country farmers in the South Island, and they're pretty cold and basic, but very romantic and appealing, built of stone, and sometimes you find names etched on the walls from more than 100 years ago. And then we have much more recent huts built by the Department of Conservation that are a bit more upmarket. They have double glazed windows and good insulation, running water and mattresses, and they're just a bit more comfortable and family friendly. So And then there's a whole range in between as well. Some of the Great Walk huts are quite flash with flushing toilets and solar lights and things like that. But the vast majority are fairly basic, and that reflects the ethos of the New Zealand backcountry, where we prefer to have a self-catering system rather than perhaps the European Alps, where they have much more hostel-like mountain huts where you could buy bedding and food and all of that sort of thing. We've got a more basic system in New Zealand.
What's the etiquette then when you go into a hut? Is it the same everywhere? There's obviously quite a list as to what you must do, but do you have to leave it as you found it?
Yeah, very much. There are quite a few aspects to it, really. I mean, leaving a note in the logbook as to where you've come from, where you're going, who you are, that sort of thing. Cleaning up after you, before you leave, sweeping everything, making sure the windows and doors are properly shut, making sure the fire is out, and you carry your rubbish out. And I guess while you're there, it's just the good manners part of it of working with the other people who are there. They're in the same boat, and getting to know people you've never met before. Some of your best friends sort of begin as someone you meet in a hut.
Right, so it's not guaranteed that you're going to walk in and there's no one there. There might be somebody staying in it already.
Entirely. Right. There could be several parties there.
Depending on the size. So big and small. And what would be the largest hut that we have in New Zealand? Could accommodate how many people?
So the largest public hut in New Zealand is called Pinnacles Hut, and that's in the Coromandel Range. And it's got a couple of different bunk rooms, and it's one of the huts that you would book ahead because it's very popular close to Auckland. And it's located on the Kauri Trail, which is a very interesting historic site. There was milling of kauri trees there in the 1920s, and there's an old dam. They used to build these big dams when they felled the kauri and build up water behind it and then flush all the logs downstream. So you can still see that dam near the hut, and there's a scramble up a rocky pinnacled ridge called the Pinnacles, which is above the hut. So yeah, that's the largest one in the country.
What about the smallest?
Two bunkers, I guess.
Forestry bivvies, ex-forestry bivvies, which you can't stand up in and room for a couple of people to sleep on the floor.
So when you say you can't stand up in, what is it? It's like a little... What's it made out of?
Like a large tent.
Oh, yes. Made out of wood.
With walls, there's tin on the outside, but framing is wood and wooden floor. And they're still very, very... One of those saved my life a long time ago, Karen, and so they've got a very important things too. Oh, just school kids overextending themselves up on the tops in winter in the Tararuas, and we eventually retreated to... We didn't have any gear to stay overnight, and, terms of a tent or anything like that, and it was very, very bad weather, lots of snow around and etc. And we were able to retreat to this little bivvy that we'd seen on the way up. We didn't know we were there until we went up. But that was, probably a lifesaver.
How many were you with, Jeff? You and...
Oh, just one other.
One other, right. Gee. And... You mentioned a stone one. Was that there's a wonderful picture in the Stuff article on the book release, and it's Shute's Hut in the Ruahine Range. That's a neat looking hut.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite huts. And it was built in 1920, so it's just turned over a century old, made of stone, which is not so unusual in the South Island, but very unusual in the North Island. And it was built by a rabbiter called Alex Shute, who lived in the hut for a number of years. And he worked for one of the stations. A lot of the mountains up there were grazed early in the 20th century, had sheep up there, and his job was to kill the rabbits that were competing with the sheep for the sparse feed in the mountains, and he was a bit of a character, probably an alcoholic, and part of the appeal of being in the mountains was to being away from alcohol and boozing. And he didn't really like company that much, and so quite often he'd pretend that he was mad if people turned up, and they usually pretty quickly went away.
I thought you were going to say that he liked it being isolated so he could drink in peace. But no.
I think he probably didn't carry much. He was known for having big benders when he'd go into town, but I think he tried to. He'd been in the First World War and perhaps experienced some horrors there. We don't really know, but I don't think he drank too much when he was living in the mountains, and perhaps it was his retreat from the horrors of the war and from society and from the evils of alcohol.
See, if only the walls could talk. There's some real stories in those huts, and just people, like you say, the teenage adventure, if you could call it that, of being saved by one of those little bivvies, did you call it? Through to all the characters who have come and go. There must be just tens of thousands of people who have gone through these huts over the years.
That's right.
And there's another little story you've got there about Asbestos Cottage. That doesn't really sound like a fun place to stay. Is it? Is it called that because it's made out of asbestos?
Unfortunately, you know that one better, Sean.
No.
Sorry, Sean, carry on.
It's not made of asbestos. It's a very old mining cottage in the hills of Kahurangi National Park in Golden Bay. And it was home to a couple, Henry and Annie Chafee, and they both fled into the mountains. They both had marriages that hadn't worked out. Annie's marriage was, by all accounts, a violent one. And when her two sons were sort of old enough to fend for themselves and had gone off into the Navy, she escaped into the mountains with her lover, who was this chap, Henry Chafee, and he was a bit of a prospector, explorer. And they lived in the mountains for over 30 years, and Annie only ever came out twice during that entire period. Henry would come out and work in the shearing gangs, earning a bit of money, and he would haul in supplies for them, all their flour and everything on his back, you know, right until his 80s. In fact, he died on the track hauling in supplies into the hut and didn't turn up. So it gets its name from a nearby asbestos mine where asbestos was mined during the 1940s, and they pushed a road in there which made the hut much more accessible, and Henry worked at the mine for a period of time. But it's the asbestos fibres that's actually not dangerous to your health. So you can walk through the mining area and get to the hut. It's about, you know, an hour or so from the road end, quite accessible, and stay in there, and it's a special place.
Yeah, so with these huts and the individuals who originally built them and lived in them, when did Doc take over running them and looking after them?
Well, when it was formed in 1987.
Did they buy them off the people?
Sorry?
Did they buy them off, you know, those who were living in the...
No, no. Well, they inherited them from Lands and Survey and Forest Service, most of them. And the other huts that were owned by clubs, they're still owned by those clubs in many cases.
Yeah. So have they been under a threat at all? Like, I imagine that a lot of people would, even though they're great places, that, you know, some people would pull them down.
Well, a lot of them are too far into the hills for people who are with vandalistic bents to... I mean, you do get vandalisation happens on some huts. That's been something that goes all the way back at least to the 1930s and 20s. So, but generally, no, the greatest threat to the huts sort of happened probably around 1990, 2000, when... Doc was financially very cash-strapped and faced the fact that they didn't have the finances to manage all these huts, and then started a process to look at which huts they would pull out themselves and get rid of. And that's when, I guess, the first passion for these huts really surfaced amongst the outdoor community, and there was a lot of angst and concern about that. And out of the other side of that, we ended up with a trial period where, rather than Doc do the work on some of those more remote huts, that the department support volunteers to do that. And that was an agreement between Federated Mountain Clubs, New Zealand Deerstalkers Association, and Trail Fund, Mountain Biking Group. And that was a three-year resounding success. And so that system was put on a proper footing with the setting up of the Backcountry Trust, which is a community organisation. And the Backcountry Trust is now maintained over 100 huts and many, many kilometres of tracks. And there's lots and lots of work going on. It's going from strength to strength.
Very good. And your book, A Bunk for the Night, A Guide to New Zealand's Best Backcountry Huts, how many pages does it run to?
I think it's over 200, isn't it?
Yeah, about 239, 240.
Fantastic, with lots of pictures.
With lots of pictures, yep. And, it's a very cool publication, and it's great to see so much interest in the community for our backcountry huts. They're wonderful things, and they've got so many stories, and so many people have so many connections to them. It's fantastic to see where they are now and the support they have from both the community and Doc.
Very good. I know this book is going to go great guns, and it's our quiz night prize tonight. It's published for those who don't, there's only one person can win it, unfortunately, but for those who'd like to get your book from elsewhere, it's published by Potten and Burton, and we're in Auckland, so the bookshops, actually, I don't know whether they're open or they're not open. You can just, you can go online and get a book as opposed to walking into a bookshop, can't you? They're not an essential service. That's out on Potten and Burton. So congratulations, you two, and to Rob.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen.
Good to talk to you. That's Sean Barnett and Jeff Spearpoint, and A Bunk for the Night, A Guide to New Zealand's Best Backcountry Huts.